Welcome to the Airplane Geeks Podcast. This is episode 88 of the show where we talk aviation. I'm Max Flight, and with me are the usual suspects, all of whom seem to be on time this episode. First is Dan Webb. Dan, how are you?
Hey, good evening, everyone. And yes, I'm actually on time this week. I'm sorry. Thank you for that reference, though.
And if anyone listening to this has any pull with any airline, Dan's your man for that summer intern position. Just keep that in mind. Also co-hosting is Rob Mark. Hi, Rob.
Good evening. And I took that showing up on time thing personally. I was only an hour late last time.
You were the latest last time.
But I was in Brazil. I was on Brazilian time, and I just got a little confused.
How did you get back from Brazil? You didn't fly commercial, did you?
I flew commercial down and back. And then, because I was down there to test fly one of the Embraer business jets, so then we got to fly it around while I was down there. But I had to get back in row 46 on this American 777 on the way back.
Great. Well, glad to have you back in this country.
Yeah, where the internet works.
Also with us is David Vanderhoof, our Airplane Geeks historian and our military aviation go-to guy. Hi, David.
Oh wow, titles growing left and right. Good evening, everyone.
Our guest today is Mary Grady. She's a contributing writer for AvWeb, which is an online aviation magazine and news service. Mary writes news. She covers aviation events, writes feature stories. I think she even takes a few photos here and there. Mary's also a holder of a pilot rating for airplanes and balloons. And I think you're also a ground instructor. Is that right, Mary?
That's true. It's been a while since I taught ground school, but I did do that for a little while.
Terrific. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Sure. Thanks.
So coming up, we have this week's aviation news. David's going to have his This Week in Aviation History segment, as always. And we've also got our Airplane Geeks Australia Desk report. Also, listener mail coming up. First, though, let's talk some aviation news. Everybody ready?
Sure.
I want the music.
Oh, all right. Here's the music. Damn. You guys are great. First story is from New York Daily News. This is, "We cost Dad his job. Kids who took over for Kennedy Airport air traffic controller blame themselves." I think by now everyone's familiar with this story. This is the New York ATC controller who decided to play take your kids to work with both his kids, I guess, and brought them in. And they actually were on the radio speaking with the airline pilots. This is a rather interesting story, Rob. You think this is an intelligent thing to do?
Well, it's funny. We wrote about it at JetOne, and it drew quite a bit of comment. And I personally, the one thing I know, I'm never going to convince people that are outside of the aviation industry that this was an okay thing to do. And I obviously, even the people inside it was not okay. It was a dumb idea, but it wasn't unsafe. It just was not. And you'd have to know more about the system and how it works and how the microphones were put together. But you know what? Honestly, I was so overwhelmed with comments, I finally burned out. And I decided that since I couldn't handle the stress of dealing with all this air traffic control gibberish, I'd go find somebody who was obviously going to get way more comments than I was and would probably be even more beleaguered. So I found the cranky flyer. And sure enough, he had twice as many comments as I had. If, of course, you measure your worth by the number of comments on your blog, which of course I don't. I think Brett does. In fact, I even told him to come by. Brett, did you ever show up, Brett?
Yes, sir.
Oh, there's Brett Snyder. Snyder from Cranky Flyer.
Brett, how are you?
Because I have more comments than you, I do measure my self-worth that way.
Yeah.
All right. So are you married, Brett?
I am.
Okay, so then it doesn't help you meet ladies or anything like that.
No, okay. You know.
See, imagine how our lives would have been different. But anyway, to the story. Brett, yes. Did you think what did you think? Is this I hate to say it's a non-story, but obviously a story that got as much impact as this or as much coverage as this isn't a non-story. It's obviously a story, but did your readers tend to think it was an unsafe issue?
For the most part, no. In fact, most of them agreed it was a non-story, which I was a little surprised when I was writing it because, you know, I put the title on there saying that I thought it was hilarious, and I figured that would get someone riled up. You know, there were a couple of people that did chime in saying, you know, this is ridiculous, should never be happening and all that. But for the most part, people actually were just kind of bored, said, yeah, well, it's fine. I wish I were that kid.
Yeah, and for the most part, too, I mean, people need to understand that FAA and the union took a very hard stand on this, but they could not have been expected to do anything else. There's no way they could possibly say anything that didn't sound like they were going to basically lynch this guy as soon as he came down from the tower cab. But it was not an unsafe situation. And unfortunately, whether people liked it or not, the pilots weren't upset about it. And they were the ones receiving the service. And they went along with the joke, too. It didn't last that long. I mean, it's not as if they had this kid up there for half a shift or something like that.
Yeah, and he also was only reading when he was just changing guys over to different frequencies, right? He was handing them off.
That's right.
He wasn't actually telling them to, you know, turn to, you know, 30 degrees or something.
No, he didn't actually direct any air traffic at all. All he did was, you know, repeat the words that his dad told him in his ear. I mean, that's all he did. And I know people that have flown that have let their kids talk on the radio, and it's just not that big a deal. But unfortunately, it's not about what it is as much as what it looks like it is.
Yeah, and it doesn't look good. I mean, in the press, no, it just doesn't look good.
It doesn't. No. That's the thing. And, you know, when I look at it, they really do have to say, because people assume from the outside, you know, it's a very stressful job. We know that. That doesn't mean it's always stressful at all times of the day, although in New York that can be the case, I guess, more than in other places. But you have to assume if there was something crazy going on, this guy's not going to let the kid, you know, take over just for fun. He's standing there, obviously reading him exactly what he should say, even down to the adios to the Aeromexico flight.
Yeah.
And it must have been a relatively, you know, slowish or at least well-controlled time, because if there was anything going on with any potential, you know he's not going to, you know, mess around with something like this. I'm sure he was looking for that couple of second window where it was actually pretty light.
What I thought of when I first saw the story is, you know, yeah, but what happens when some event develops, some situation develops that requires, you know, sort of split second reaction on the part of the controller?
Can I answer that one? Because I do actually have...
You have some experience with this.
Unfortunately, 10 years worth. But and so what they do is they plug in two microphones that look basically like some of the headsets you wear in an airplane. And, you know, the trainee controller, which is where he had his son plugged in, can talk on the radios just like a normal controller. But the trainer is plugged into a different plug. And if at any point the person that's training says something the trainer doesn't like, he can key his mic and he overrides the other guy.
Ah, see, I didn't realize that.
And so, yeah, that's why to those of us that understand that, we said, look, this is not a big deal. It's not like they were going to run two together and he'd have to run across the tower cab to prevent a collision or something like that. But I can still well understand why people that fly would be upset.
Yeah, you know, there were a couple of people that commented on the blog, on my blog, that were saying, you know, it's not an issue of was it safe or was it not. It's an issue of, you know, building a safety culture. And is this the kind of thing that, you know, you want to be allowing people to do? And I mean, I still stand by. I think it was perfectly fine. I don't have a problem with it. But it really is for an internal and external facing culture, because people are really going to be looking at this. You know, you have to do something. You have to make it look like it's unacceptable, because it was pretty dumb. But I don't know. I still think it was funny.
Well, but people are pretty nervous about anything related to flying. Let's be serious.
Yeah.
It's 9/11. Our whole vision of the aviation industry has changed. Whether we like it or not, even when people say they don't care or they're not thinking about it, they probably are. Look at these new body scanners that I think, are we going to talk about that? No, you talked about that last week, I think, when I was not here.
Right.
The blowy X-ray things. What do they call those things?
The backscatter.
Backscatter. Yes. Oh, I thought it was back scratcher.
Oh, you wish. No.
Oh, see, I wasn't as worried about it because I thought, well, if it's going to scratch my back while I'm in there, maybe it wouldn't be such a bad thing.
Wait, did you say the blowy ones? Are you talking about the puffers?
Oh, isn't that all the same?
No, the puffer's different.
The puffers are the ones that they found out sucked, and they got rid of them. Yeah.
So they didn't blow, they sucked?
Both, apparently.
Okay. Anyway,
they weren't accurate, I should say.
Hey, guys, I would have thrown a different point at you. Would it have been a really big deal if it never got recorded by Live ATC? Not to say that I don't like the guys over at Live ATC and quite often listen to PHL at home, but it was a public record.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, I'm sure you can't tell me that this hasn't happened in the past. I won't comment that I know things like that happen personally, but I won't. will say that it has happened in the past, and out of dumb luck, it was recorded and became a matter of public record.
Yeah.
Well, you know, if a tree falls in the forest, right?
Right, right. Mary, did you get any kind of reaction over at AvWeb on this story?
Yeah, we did actually. Our editorial director, Paul Bertarelli, who you guys know from Aviation Consumer, he also writes blogs for us sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote a blog about that, you know, and kind of had his analysis of it. And yeah, we got tons of comments kind of running the gamut that you guys have been talking about. You know, I mean, generally, pilots understand there was nothing unsafe really going on there. But at the same time, I think the consensus was most people felt that it wasn't the wisest thing to do.
Right.
Well, wait a minute. Can I ask a question? I'm sure Brett would be wondering about the same thing. Mary, how many comments did you guys get?
it's a contest for Rob, isn't it?
No. I mean, Brett started it. He's the one that said his self-worth is focused around comments. I just agreed with him. I mean,
it was a pretty long list. I mean, I didn't count it, but you're welcome to go there and check it out.
Compare those things. Brett, you want to take care of that for us?
You want me to? Are you kidding me?
Okay.
Yeah. I'll get right
Brett, thanks for coming, buddy.
All right, guys. I'm off to watch the Oscars, I guess.
All right.
Okay. Let us know. Thanks a lot, Brett.
Cheers, right. Brett.
Guys, bye.
All right. That's great. That's Brett Snyder from the Cranky Flyer. Let's move on to our next story, flight attendants. This is from the Los Angeles Times. Flight attendants union wants combat training. Now, this is rather interesting. I know this has been discussed in at least a couple of blogs over the last month, but it turns out that the Association of Flight Attendants has been lobbying Congress to adopt its strategy, according to this article, for stronger counterterrorism measures. Now, this association has got four things that they would like to see done, and I'm going to take a look at them in reverse order from what's in the article. The fourth one is shut down onboard wireless internet during high threat periods to prevent terrorists from communicating with collaborators on the ground. Okay, I guess that kind of makes sense, you think?
Define high threat period in my world. I guess that means the moment you step out of the cab into the airport and then get in the cab at your destination. Is that your high threat period that the internet service should be turned off? Because there's going to be a lot of people really upset.
Hopefully not, but yeah. What even if it's something that occurs in flight? How does that period get established and communicated? I don't know. The next one is to standardize the size of carry-on luggage. Why, you ask? So that flight attendants can look for suspicious passengers instead of struggling with oversized bags. So I guess the notion here is that kind of reduce the load on the flight attendants so that they can be on the lookout for bad guys.
I'm thinking about that one.
That one's not so obvious.
Yeah.
All right. The next one is equip flight attendants with portable communications devices so they can speak to the pilots during emergencies. I guess that kind of makes sense. I mean, the pilots are behind those reinforced locked doors if something's going on. And I guess this was an issue with the underwear bomber where this guy was out there being tackled in the cabin. And I'm not sure the flight crew knew what was going on.
Yeah, but they do have interphones to the cockpit.
Yeah.
Are they assuming that those don't work?
I guess so. I guess with the
more
definition.
Instantaneous.
Well, their definition is portable, meaning that if you're in the back of the cabin and you're dealing with an incident in the back of the cabin, you can't get to an interphone.
Yeah. I guess the thing is because to get to the interphone, you have to walk to a galley. So, yeah, I buy that one.
That one, yeah. Okay. That one seems kind of reasonable. And then the last one. institute mandatory hand-to-hand combat training for all crew members.
That new reality show is coming with those Virgin America flight attendants, and if they get hand-to-hand flight, hand-to-hand combat training, I mean, that'd be a lot more interesting. That's a rating boost right there.
Yeah, no doubt. The union says this is what they want. Do you think flight attendants really want to? I mean, I'm sure that there are some that, you know, wouldn't mind having a little bit of training in this area, but it just doesn't fit with my perception of the average flight attendant that they'd want to be trained so that they could engage in a fight with a terrorist.
Well, I guess it's one of those things, like with the underwear bomber, where it was stuck with the passengers trying to subdue the guys. So I guess it would help. I'm just not sure how I feel about making it mandatory.
And if you do that, does that then place some obligation on the part of the flight attendants to take some significant action if an incident is occurring? I mean, the air marshals are obviously trained, and if required, would, you know, jump at the chance to subdue someone who was trying to cause damage. But
air marshal dependent. I mean, there's no guarantee that you're going to be on a flight with an air marshal.
So, I mean, are they saying they want to, in effect, make the flight attendants sort of equivalent to unarmed deputy air marshals? I mean, is that really what we want to turn the flight attendants into? I'm having trouble with it.
I can see where the flight attendants consider their job as the safety of the people in the cabin. So they might consider this a way that they can help preserve, you know, the safety of the cabin. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, I see your point. I mean, why should they have to be trained as policemen as well as everything else they have to do? It doesn't really seem fair. It'd be better to have an air marshal on every flight if you're that concerned about security.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the question, too, is that are they there for the security of, dealing with an underwear bomber, or are they there to deal with the unruly guy in 24B who's had too much to drink, who starts getting really crazy, and maybe it's some of all of that, but it's kind of like what we saw when they started putting guns in the cockpit. If you keep ramping it up, eventually something ugly is going to happen, I just think, but that's just me.
Let's figure there could be that one unruly path. I mean, I think eventually it says lawsuit all over it, but Rob, don't you mean the person in row 44 flying back from Brazil who's had too much to drink?
Well, it could be a guy like that too. I mean, because those are some of the worst. Wait a minute, Dan, are you poking fun at me?
Yes, that's my thing. That's the only reason I'm still on this podcast is because the listeners like me mocking you. I think
you are a cruel man. You are a cruel man.
Well.
But Dan, wasn't that the same flight that the guy, the air marshal that was sitting next to the guy in 44 got outed because some guy by Jetwine tweeted that he was sitting next to a hot air marshal?
Oh, yeah, exactly.
You guys are bad, I'll tell you.
I can see Rob dressing as Kim Kardashian. Yeah, that'd be fine.
I mean, hard to believe that the flight attendants really, really want hand-to-hand combat training. Maybe the union is pushing and saying that you guys really should want this because it will protect you or give you some chance to defend yourselves. But, I don't know. This is a tough one on me.
Yeah. Well, presumably if the flight attendants are not in favor of this, they'll speak up and let their union know how they really do feel.
Well, maybe we should get somebody from AFA on here.
I got Heather Poole on here again sometime.
That's a great idea.
Any of our FA listeners out there, because we know we have a bunch of them, give us a call or send us listener mail or send us email.
Yeah,
let us know what you think.
Yeah, I'd be curious to know if flight attendant listeners really want hand-to-hand combat. I'd be really curious about that.
Yeah, me too. Now, another flight attendant issue, which is maybe not as quite as serious, although maybe it is for some, is reported by the Atlanta Business News. This is flight attendants protest AirTran swimsuit plane. You might remember, I think it was about a year ago. Let's see, I think this was Southwest had a deal with Sports Illustrated for a swimsuit model kind of graphic boldly displayed across the fuselage of, I think, just one aircraft. And Sports Illustrated is back, this time with AirTran. And this promotion is ending soon, but still some of the folks are not appreciative of the graphic on this particular 737.
It looks like a World War II bomber.
It does.
I was going to say the exact same thing.
I think it's very reminiscent of a nose art that you'd see on World War II bombers, but it's, it doesn't seem particularly risque to me.
Actually, when I saw the press release in the first place with AirTrans saying that they were going to do this, I immediately thought, okay, Southwest doesn't want to touch this thing with a 10-foot pole again, but it seems that AirTran took a much more conservative approach because last year on Southwest, it was basically a full fuselage.
Yeah, that was a big
decal. Where yeah. This is very very tame compared to that. So I just don't see the big deal here.
You know, and I really agree. I mean, I told my girlfriend when she posted that it was not a big deal to me, and that I didn't think it was going to, anybody else was really going to care. But
you're dreaming.
Now my wife is upset. But
so Mary, as the sole representative of the other gender on this podcast. Are we being typical males here?
More or less, I'd say, yeah.
Okay, well, we just got told we were pigs. Okay, let's move on.
Well, I mean, if we were typical males, we would say that the decal wasn't big enough.
You're speaking for the typical teenage male category.
Ah, this
category.
Is true. This is true.
Us old guys tend to be more subtle. All right, enough of that. Next story. This is from Allegiant. Allegiant Travel Company to purchase 6 Boeing 757 aircraft. Let me pause here. Did you all get the Dan sent this in? Did you guys see this link?
Yeah, I did.
Of course, he's been talking about it all stinking weekend on Twitter.
So Allegiant has signed a purchase agreement, and they're going to acquire, according to this press release, 6 Boeing 757-200 aircraft coming from a, I think, unnamed, is that right, Dan, unnamed European operator?
Yeah, and I've been trying to spend the entire weekend trying to figure out who it is.
Which is, of course, why you don't have a date, Dan.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we need to address the fact that Friday night, he was spending more time on Twitter trying to figure out where these hidden 757s were when the rest of the world should have been out having a good time and
that's
a date.
Right. Come that's on, our Dan.
We're worried about
that
you.
That was a good time. That was a good time. anyway, I've narrowed it down to BA.
Right.
But those have all been sold. Supposedly those have been sold to be converted to freighters. Thompson, and Thompson, that was where the rumor started in July that they're getting some from Thompson.
What about
Thomas Cook is another possibility.
Yeah.
I think Iceland Air is a possibility. Finnair is also a possibility because they're dumping a few 75s as well. so we'll see how that pans out because depending on where they get them from, that opens up a few possibilities. Well, that answers some questions about where they can operate them and what routes they can use them on.
This says that these are ETOPS rated planes, right?
Right. But I mean, some other things that are a factor, it depends if it has what engine it has. So generally, there are a couple variants of the Pratt engine, but generally the Pratt engined 75s like the Finnairs don't have as much power than the Rolls-Royce engined 757s. So for example, an Allegiant base is Bellingham, Washington. They have a shorter runway. I believe it's under 7,000 feet. So running Bellingham Honolulu, for example, might be tough with a Pratt 757. You might need some weight restrictions there, where it would be a lot easier with a Rolls Royce engine 757. One thing that's I'm not sure of an issue because I think each have this configuration, but there are actually a couple of exit configurations for the 75. One with just 4 doors on each side, and then one with 3 doors and 2 overwing exits. The former in a one class configuration can seat up to 239. The latter can seat up to 224. A bunch of issues there. Once we can figure it out, the Finnair 75s have winglets, for example. I think these will end up with winglets eventually, no matter what. But yeah, so that's just part of it. But there are whole other questions that are unanswered at this point with the situation. Anyway,
and they're planning on using these to Hawaii. Is that right?
Yeah, they're planning to use these to Hawaii, which has been rumored for a while. So one issue there is we have no idea what the routes will fly, because basically the Allegiant formula has been on one end you have a major destination, so like a Las Vegas, an Orlando, Los Angeles, Tampa, what have you. And then on the other end of the route map you have these smaller airports that have service to these leader destinations maybe 3-4 times a week.
Mm-hmm.
So this could potentially be an extension of that. So on one end, you have Honolulu, and then you have these smaller markets. But then one question is, what facilities do these airports have? For example, to get once these aircraft are once Allegiant becomes ETOPS certified, every time an ETOPS aircraft is going to fly an ETOPS route, it needs to get a quick inspection from an ETOPS licensed mechanic. So, do some of these smaller airports have mechanics that are ETOPS licensed? Is it even worth it for a flight that might operate two times a week? Yeah, and this whole ETOPS process will take a little while, and I think that's one reason. You'll see the 75s come in. The first two are coming in the next couple of months, but won't start operating until the fourth quarter. And part of that is these will be receiving a cabin refresh. But also, Allegiant does need to get ETOPS certified, which is a much less intense process than it was back in the beginning in the late 80s. Because if we were back then and those rules were followed exactly to the letter of the law, you'd have... Allegiant would have to operate these aircraft for a year domestically to get ETOPS 120 certification, and then have to operate them for a year under ETOPS 120 to get ETOPS 180, which is what you need for Hawaii. Those rules have slowly changed over the years. So like the FAA could waive them. So for example, when Hawaiian got their 767s in 2001, they got ETOPS 180 from the get-go, partially because I think the big factor is there. They were very experienced on those routes with the DC-10 already. But in this case, basically, Allegiant has a whole lot of paperwork and procedures to establish, and they would have to do some things called they operate some what the FAA calls validation flights. So, and what's required there would vary whatever the FAA decides, but things like an ETOPS diversion or perhaps a simulated engine failure. So that takes a little while. And then we don't know how these are going to be configured, and there are a couple issues there. Right now, Allegiant does pack them full on the MD-80s, and I'm going to use David's favorite phrase, seat pitch.
Woo!
What is their seat pitch, Dan?
I'm going on Seat Guru right now. About 30 inches on the MD-80, which isn't bad. I mean, generally, that's right in line with the legacies. Generally, around the legacies, you might find 32, 31. So here are the couple of issues, though. Well, first, if Allegiant goes over 200 passengers, you need to add another flight attendant. So that would be one reason to either keep it right under 200 or go not like right over, because you want the cost of the initial flight attendant spread out. But another issue is if you put more butts in seats, that's more weight, so you decrease the range. So that could potentially if you lose a couple hundred miles in range with those extra passengers, that would affect what routes you can fly. So I think that's one reason these 75s might end up with winglets eventually to boost that range. So it'll be interesting. Right now, Allegiant has an all-economy configuration. I wouldn't be surprised if here, on a longer flight, some customers might see value in a slightly premium product. Nothing too fancy like a first class, but something like a United Economy Plus or a Frontier Stretch, just a few extra inches of leg room. And, you know, maybe Allegiant loves ancillary revenue. So something like Alaska and Hawaiian already have digi players for rent your flight. So that'd be interesting. But I mean, Hawaii has really been a fun market to watch of late, with ATA and Aloha out of the market. We've seen Alaska and Continental fill the void. I'm not sure exactly where Legion will put these. If they do something like a Los Angeles Honolulu, that's already a competitive market. So I think they might try to continue what they've done, this non-daily service from smaller markets, find a niche, a little niche for themselves. And I mean, it'll be fun to watch, but definitely more questions than answers right now, and I'm sure we'll get a clearer picture in the next couple months. Whew.
But you know one thing, and now that you've taken a breath, Dan, I think it's really interesting when you think about Allegiant, because just even a few years ago, people were saying, oh, you know, Allegiant, come on, they're not a real airline. I mean, they're just Allegiant. I mean, they're kind of playing at this whole thing. And slowly but surely, they've had quarter after quarter of profit during times when most of the rest of the airlines were losing money. And they just seem to have found that very special niche. I mean, they're obviously not for everybody, but they seem to have really honed that very, very well, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. And I mean, their last load factor, I think, was 91%. I think it is fair to not consider Allegiant an airline, and I think that's a good thing. I think it's not just an airline. It's a travel company that has to fly airplanes. So the airline is a huge part of that, but Allegiant's also looking at, okay, what kind of revenue can we get here from vacation packages and hotel revenue and things like that. So yeah, the airline's a big part of it, but I think I think they're looking at a slightly bigger picture here. So I mean, if you want to buy a package to, you know, do Orlando, I think they're going to do the same thing for Hawaii. And I mean, that's obviously a huge leisure destination. And if they can open that market and generate some demand here, I think it'll work good for them.
Yeah.
All right, well, Dan, we'll be watching your Twitter feed, I think, for the latest breaking news on this one.
There's going to be a very long blog post tomorrow.
even if it is, he's breaking his own news.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. I'm sorry. For some reason, this story got me really going.
It really did.
It's because,
oh, really? I didn't notice that.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think it maybe it was just because I don't know about you guys, but I think airline announcement wise, I think last week was kind of painfully slow.
Yeah,
so,
a bit.
Yeah. So to get an announcement on Friday, I was like, oh my God, finally we got some news. Oh, analyze. So, yeah.
Barry,
anyway,
don't you think that Dan needs to get out more?
Yeah, I'm sure there's a girl geek out there who's just perfect for him and is probably on the internet right now.
Yeah. I don't think just that. I think an airline needs to hire me for this summer.
Absolutely.
Allegiant, all your analysis will be done about ETOPS observations
yeah,
in advance.
Right.
Yeah, actually, you know, they do have an opening for network planning internships, so I might I'm actually planning to apply for that. If anyone from Allegiant's listening.
There you go. All right, moving on. We have a press release from Boeing. This is again on the Air Force tanker. And I promise we won't spend too much time on it.
Have we ever talked about that before?
I think we have about...
once a week?
Once a week. Well, Boeing has announced some details about how they intend to respond to the RFP. And again, they are going to offer up the 767. And they've described a few aspects of their plan. There's probably a lot more that's unstated at this point, but they have laid some of their cards out on the table. David, do you want to mention a few of those?
Well, we now know it's the 777 was a ruse. We're back to a 767, though it is a 767 with winglets. That's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
It's also a 767 with a 787 glass cockpit,
right?
Which is bigger, displays. Their press release says they're bigger than the Airbus displays. So we're getting kind of a hybrid. We've got the latest and greatest electronics coming from the 787 and morphing into the old school 767. So it's going to be interesting. Now comes the real question, which we'll go back to. And I think we could leave it at this. Is Northrop going to go along and do their bid? And we won't know that for a while.
Right. That's the big question.
Yeah, I was going to mention that. And I have to think that the Defense Department is hoping that Northrop will bid. Because I think
it'll
if you have one
life
vendor competing
easier,
here.
If they do.
Yeah.
You know, at this point, I don't even care who wins. I just want this story to die.
Yeah. Yeah. I've even seen at least one person float around the idea that if Northrop Grumman does not bid, would EADS come out on their own with some kind of a bid? That might be just wild speculation, but kind of interesting to contemplate.
You know, I think they. I know EADS has expressed some interest in the American market, and even there's an article in Flight a few weeks ago about them saying how the A400 would be a good fit over here. But let's be honest, I feel that EADS knows very well the political environment in this country. And I think that's why you saw this partnership with Northrop, and because they have this wonderful contingent of senators and representatives who are behind Northrop. And I right. think if it was just a pure EADS bid, I think that if you look at the political contention this deal has caused, as is with a major American defense contractor involved, if it's just EADS all the way, I think that's going to be a lot worse.
Again, our guest this episode is Mary Grady. She's a contributing writer for AvWeb. Mary, how long have you been with AvWeb?
About 10 years.
I'm sure a lot of our listeners know all about AvWeb, but for those few who haven't discovered it yet, tell us a little bit about AvWeb.
Okay, well, it's a website, and it's been around. It's actually been around for 15 years, which is way back to almost the birth of the internet.
Yeah, absolutely. And,
yeah, so it's been around a long time. It actually started out as sort of a forum, really a conversation place, and it morphed, you know, it grew into a big news site. And yeah, so it's been around a long time. There's tons of content there. We've got video now. We've got podcasts. We've got news that's updated every day. So it's just everything. We cover mostly general aviation, but also, you know, other aspects of aviation that our readers might be interested in.
Right. And how about you personally in terms of your aviation background?
I'm a pilot. As you mentioned, I started out, actually, I was interested in balloons. So that's what got me interested in aviation. I didn't know anything about it, really. I mean, I didn't have any family members who were pilots or anything like that. And I went to a balloon rally, and I just thought it was the greatest thing, and I'd like to do that. So I started to learn about it, and I learned about, you know, what's involved in being a pilot. And I got a job here at the local airport, kind of a work-study job, and started taking flying lessons and just took it from there.
Yeah, but how did you get to be a writer?
That's a good question. I don't know. I just it's something I was always interested in. I actually went to college starting to be a writer, but I kind of got distracted. I got interested in other stuff. And so when I graduated from graduate school, I got an internship at National Geographic, and I was an editor there. So that was kind of the start of my on-the-job training in publishing, I guess.
Wow, that must have been pretty cool.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. And after that, I got a job at a newspaper, which is more kind of on-the-job training in the publishing world. And then after that, I became a writer.
Now, you have you had a recent piece in AvWeb about female pilots celebrating the 100th anniversary of the first time a woman earned a pilot certificate by a paying-it-forward kind of approach.
Well, as I understand that, there's a group of women. It's, well, of course, right now it's Women's History Month.
Right.
And it's the 100th anniversary of the first time a woman, you know, was certified as a pilot, which was actually a French woman. And so their idea is kind of, you know, similar to what Young Eagles do, is that if a woman pilot, well, I guess their theory is that the best way to get a girl interested in flying is for her to actually meet a woman who actually flies.
Hmm.
As if there aren't a lot of women who actually do that, it's probably a good idea to try to organize that a little bit and encourage people to help make that happen.
Yeah, I think we traded some email previously, and I think you said that, 6 or 7% only of pilots are women?
Yeah, that's right, which is actually kind of weird because it hasn't changed that much over, you know, the 100 years, because there's always been women involved in flying. Of course, you've heard of Amelia Earhart, and there were a lot of other women involved right from the beginning. And I'm not sure if it's fluctuated much over time, but as of now, it's still about 6 or 7%.
What do you think the barrier is?
Well, there's been a lot of talk about that, and I've asked a lot of women that, and I've got a lot of different answers.
Huh.
And it's hard to say. I mean, of course, women in general still make less money than men and maybe have less disposable income than men, so that might be one factor. Another factor might be, like this group of women is saying, is just that there's a lot of girls out there who've never seen a woman who flies, so maybe it hasn't occurred to them that that's something that they can do.
Mm-hmm.
Other people have said to me that, you know, they can't imagine that a girl today wouldn't just assume that she can do anything that she wants to do, and there's something to that, too. So maybe it's something that's just going to change over time, I think.
So you don't, Mary, you don't think it had anything to do with the fact that Amelia Earhart got lost and never came back?
And that just scared women ever since?
Yeah, well, that's what I was thinking.
I was thinking maybe Rob was scaring him away.
Yeah, there is that notion that there are people like Rob at altitude too.
Yeah, but seriously, you know, until the last 20 years, I mean, there are still a lot of guys out there that are not real keen on flying with ladies. I mean, in terms of professional crews, I mean, I can't speak to as much to people that are learning to fly in small airplanes, but on the professional side, there are a lot of guys that still don't like flying with ladies.
Really?
Yeah, they're tough.
I would have thought those guys would have died out by now.
Not yet.
No. Well,
No, I'm serious.
I think what does happen is not so much that these are women that we're talking about, but it's just that it's a minority in the workplace. And I think that creates this situation where people are afraid that because they are a minority, they're not held to the same standard. You know, maybe they're allowed a little bit more leeway and they don't have to be as competitive. And the result of that, of course, is that every woman in the cockpit then has to kind of prove that she has a right to be there, which isn't really fair either. So so I think it's just, like I said, it's not even so much that these are women in this situation, but just a minority of any kind faces these same kind of challenges. And it just changes with time. And, you know, eventually, you know, those old guys will die out who have those attitudes. And things will change. And of course, women in professional pilot community have a little bit different percentage too. There's about 10 to 15% of professional pilots are women. So that is increasing, and it's going to change.
Well, and let's hope it keeps changing.
I think it will.
Another topic, we have the air show season starting up, and Sun and Fun is coming up. I think that's the next big event. Do you make many of the shows, Mary?
Yeah, we always go to Sun and Fun, and we always go to Oshkosh. And in fact, I was just telling a friend of mine that this being the 10th year that I'll be at Oshkosh, I've now spent 2.5 months of my life at Oshkosh.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, I guess that's a good thing.
Not so, necessarily in a tent, though.
No, not in a tent, luckily.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
That would be tough.
Yeah, that would be a lot.
When you look ahead, Mary, to the shows this year, this summer, do you see any trends or anything new coming along that we can expect to see? Or are we just going to have to discover it as we attend these events?
Well, of course, yeah, there's always something that'll surprise you coming up. And I guess the big thing this year, of course, is that people are hoping that we've seen the bottom of the downturn.
Yeah.
And, you know, the last year or so, there wasn't a whole lot of new stuff and things were being, you know, things that are in production are being slowed down. And so it'd be nice to see people start to feel a little bit more confident and maybe start bringing out some new airplanes.
Mm.
So we'll see if that happens. And of course, there's a lot of interest in some of the alternative fuels and the, you know, the electric airplanes and all of that. We'll see what's going on with all of that segment, too.
Yeah, that's interesting you bring that up. We've talked about alternative fuels, especially with respect to airlines. Is the GA community also looking at alternative fuels? Is it getting much traction in that segment?
Yeah, definitely. Well, there's a lot of interest, of course, in an alternative to 100 low lead, just because, you know, that's there's concern over whether that supply will at some point just kind of dry up because, you know, low lead gas isn't being produced except for this little market anymore. So there's an interest in finding an alternative to that. And there's also an interest in it just, you know, from the sense of, you know, who wants to be burning petroleum anymore if there's an alternative.
Right.
So, yeah, I think there's a lot of interest and there's a lot of interest in the electric planes. And actually, one of the interesting things that came up last year, there's a company in China called Unique that's building electric airplanes. Their business before was building remote controlled airplanes. And they said that when those remote control planes changed from being little gasoline engines to electric engines, they became way more popular. And that's an interesting idea. I mean, you wonder if you had an electric airplane that was just easier to maintain, easier to take care of, you know, was quiet, less vibration, would that really be more popular with people?
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, because I would imagine the maintenance costs would be a lot lower on an electric plane, I think.
It would just be a lot less stuff you had to deal with, a much simpler kind of an engine, you know, and you don't have to check the oil. You don't have to, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's interesting. We had Jeremy Manette from Sonics on a couple of months ago, and they're working on an electric airplane as well. And I know from having seen their machine, of course, one issue they're still struggling with is how to make an electric motor that's powerful enough to power the airplane as well as carry the batteries, because the battery technology just isn't there yet. You see that in cars, in the Prius. I mean, that's a lot of weight, actually, of the car is actually the batteries.
Yeah. If you can make little lightweight fuel cells or something like that that would replace the lead acid or even the lithium battery technology, that would change the game completely.
Mm-hmm. And I think that battery technology is changing. I mean, it's you know, there's so much demand for it and so much need for it that I think there are more powerful and lighter weight batteries not too far in the future.
Okay, going back to AVWeb a little bit, I'm just curious as to how the sort of aviation news business is doing these days. Is AVWeb reaching the audience that you guys are trying to reach?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I think we're doing really well. And of course, a few years ago, AVWeb, you know, which I said it started out as a real grassroots kind of operation, it was bought up by a bigger publishing company, you know, Belfour Publishing, which also publishes a lot of other aviation magazines, and these are serious business people, and they seem pretty happy with us, and I think if they weren't happy with us, you know, we'd be hearing about it.
Yeah. I guess I'm wondering, you know, is the market still expanding, or are you and others like AVWeb, you know, competing for a limited pie? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I think there's been a lot of concern for a long time, and you hear this all the time, like at Oshkosh or, you know, from AOPA or EAA, like, where are the new pilots coming from, you know? And, of course, the total number of pilots in GA has been in decline for, you know, quite a long time. But at the same time, it's still a substantial number of people. I mean, you've still got pilots out there, and they still need information. And even people who aren't necessarily certificate holders but are still interested in the aviation world. I don't know. I don't see any major decline coming up on the horizon.
Okay. All right. Well, Mary, we have a little game we play. It's called Word Association. We'll each say a word or maybe even a little phrase, and then you just start talking about the first thing that comes into your head. How's that?
Sounds dangerous to me, but I'll try it.
No, it...
Oh, it is. Oh, I mean, no, it's not.
No, it's not. It's fun. It's fun. Okay. So who'd like to start?
David.
Why do I always have to start? Okay.
You don't always start. I usually start.
Okay, Mary, Oshkosh.
Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Experimental. How's that?
Yeah, well, tell us more about it. When you think of experimental, what does that mean to you?
We only say one word. You can say as much as you want.
Yeah.
Oh, I get it. Okay. I thought it was a one word and kind of go around type of thing.
No.
Oh, okay. Well, Oshkosh is just, you know, as you guys know, I'm sure most of you guys have been there, right? For that week, it's the world as far as aviation is concerned, and everything happens there, and everybody has got a new product. That's where they want to introduce it. And it's just, so it's great. It's really fun to be there. The people at EAA are just great to us. And it's a lot of fun, too, because all the other journalists are there. You know, the whole aviation press is there. So it's always a good time.
It's a big community.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Dan, have you got a word for Mary?
But I do have a quick story. But you know what's really embarrassing? When I was first on, and I was just pure Dan Webb, all airline dork, all the time, and you had the word Oshkosh for me. My only reaction for that was Oshkosh Bagosh.
That's right. I remember that. It meant jeans to you.
Pretty embarrassed about that. But no, I don't have a word, but I just wanted to, you know, fill the MP3 with my voice.
Word association fail. All right, we'll move on to Rob. Rob, have you got a word?
FAA.
Is this still for me?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, that's for you. They know what I think.
Well, you know, the FAA is a big organization, and I think it's kind of like the Senate. It's like everybody hates the government, but everybody thinks that their senator is a great guy. You know.
Interesting
point.
I kind of see that in the FAA too. I mean, everybody, you know, complains about the FAA, but a lot of people who actually deal with, you know, this guy or that guy think, well, he's actually a pretty good guy, or, you know, a pretty good person and doing a good job. But overall, I know there's you just never know what you're going to get.
Okay. I have two words. Aviation journalists.
Well, I guess that's kind of the same thing, right? There's some of everything there.
Do you think aviation journalism is at the level of professionalism that it should be?
How can you answer that? I don't know. It's like, what about journalism in general? You know, is that at the level it should be? I mean, you're going to have some of everything. You're going to have Walter Cronkite, and you're going to have, you know,
Joe Blogger.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you've got some of everything out there. So it's kind of an impossible question to answer, I think. You know, I think there's a lot of people out there doing really good work and, you know, trying to get people information that they need. And but then, of course, it's the internet. Anybody can say whatever they want. So that can be good and bad.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's sometimes, many times, hard to sort of separate the wheat from the chaff, so to speak. Separate the informed journalism from the uninformed and just strictly, you know, opinion. It's just so easy to, you know, catch people's ear these days with what might appear to be journalism that it's hard sometimes to tell what's quality and what's not.
Well, that's a good reason to come to AvWeb, and then you don't have to.
Okay, great.
All right. Well, I appreciate it. It was fun.
All right. Yeah. Thank you very much. That's Mary Grady. Mary, tell people where they can find you and AvWeb online.
Okay. You can find us online at www.avweb.com. We have fresh news every day.
You have news. You have podcasts, right?
That's right. We have video. We cover all the shows, you know, Oshkosh, Sun and Fun, et cetera, et cetera. And we have blogs.
Okay. Mary, thanks again for joining us.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Mary.
Thank you.
Bye, Mary.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
now with This Week in Aviation, it's David Vanderhoof, the official Airplane Geeks historian.
Yay. Thanks, Max. Welcome to This Week in Aviation, Volume 2, Episode 7, March 7th through March 13th. March 7th, 1959. I'm going to be selfish and say, if you want to know what happened today in 1959, go to whatjustflewby.com. I worked very hard on that blog post today, so I'd like everyone to go read it. It's about Melvin C. Godwald and a very interesting life in aviation. And our guest mentioned the 100th anniversary of the first woman's first flight. That actually occurred on March 8, 1910. Madame Raymonde de la Roche, after being an accomplished balloonist, becomes the first woman to get her pilot's license. Her FAI ticket was number 36, so she was the 36th person in France to acquire her pilot's license. On March 8, 1974, Charles de Gaulle International Airport opens. On March 10, 1948, VF-5A, which eventually became VF-51, the Screaming Eagles, becomes the first U.S. Navy squadron to operate jet aircraft with F-9 F-2 Panthers. Okay, and on March 11, 1995, just because I had to say this, because I read this and broke into hysterics, OK Airlines, China's first private airline, makes its first revenue flight with 81 people. The flight was completed by a 737-9B5 B1510. And evidently, OK Airlines went out of business about 9 months later and reopened for business in January of 2009. To this day, you can still fly OK Airlines. And last but not least, first flights had occurred during the week of March 7th through March 13th. As you can tell, it was a light news week, guys. The Northrop T-38 Talon first flew on March 10th, 1959. 1,187 were built, and the T-38 will be training United States pilots through 2030.
Wow.
So that's the way it was, March 7th through March 13th.
So even historically, this is a lame news week. Okay.
Hey, wait a minute. Wait a minute. I have a news item that you guys seem to have missed.
Uh-oh.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
What's that?
Well, March the 12th. Come on. Don't tell me you don't know what happened on March the 12th, 1949.
Rob, you had 20 years of flight time at that point?
It's my birthday.
Oh.
Oh, well.
So Friday's my birthday, guys, in case... You know, I mean, if you wanted to send me a little greeting, rob@jetwine.com. I mean,
look, Rob, look, on my Facebook, it only goes up to birthdays for Tuesday, so come on here. I'll notice soon enough.
Dan, I'm glad to see that I'm not the only one that relies on Facebook for that tool.
Yes.
Well, happy birthday, Rob.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Robert.
Robert.
Happy birthday to you.
And for all the listeners that are saying, wow, I didn't know you could still be in radio when you're that old. So there you have it.
Oh, wow. So Rob, I mean the.
You mean this sincerely?
Half joking, half serious. You going to take Social Security early or not here?
No. You know, I'm going to leave that $57 a month in the government's pocket and hope that it will grow into something more useful at some point.
Because you know that I just want to make sure that my monetary gift, my tax liability to you, is well used.
Well, I'm going to use it well someday. In fact, I'm going to Omaha tomorrow. I'm going to University of Nebraska. Any Cornhusker fans out there? No. I just wondered. But I'm going to Omaha tomorrow, and I'm going to use some of my retirement money there.
At the casino?
Yeah. Is there a casino in Omaha? I actually was going to go have lunch with Warren. You know, Warren and I go way back.
Warren Buffett?
Yeah, of course. You know, Warren.
Okay. Good luck with that.
Okay. All right. But I
well, that
I
takes care of the historical segment. We've talked about Rob's old age.
Well, come on. That's history, right? It's living history. All right. I'm done. Go ahead.
The didgeridoo means it's time for the Australian News Desk. Here's two of the craziest guys we could find south of the equator. It's Steve Vischer and Grant McHaren from the Plain Crazy Down Under podcast.
Well, g'day folks, it's Steve Vischer here, back for the Australia Desk for episode 88 of the Airplane Geek Show. And joining me from underneath a pile of packing boxes and papers in the remains of his study the day before he moved to his new residence, it's Grant McHaren. Grant, are you anywhere around?
Hang on.
Move that box.
Oh, like that, yeah.
Oh, that's better.
Right.
Hey, geez, you look a bit tired, mate. You've been busy or something.
Yeah. Throwing boxes and trucks and moving them around the place and dodging rain showers and hailstorms and flooding, and we still haven't finished yet.
Yeah. All back tomorrow. Hey, Grant, what a week we've had weather-wise. Speaking of the weather, it's, boy, a week ago it was summertime, and I don't know what it was yesterday, but we've had the worst storms in a century here down in Melbourne. We were almost wiped off the map.
Yeah, we've had hailstorms that were about 4 inches in diameter for your American folks. Which is about 10 centimetres, about the size of a good lemon. Lots of spikes on them as well. There's been cars wiped out. They've been flooded out. Friends have had their cars flooded in suburbs all around us. But so far, we've been lucky, touch wood.
Yeah, some friends of mine, in fact, had their car parked out in a street in a suburb not that far away from where I live down here in the south of Melbourne. And the hail came up that street and wrote off every car in the street.
Damaged. Should have parked their cars there.
Yeah, that's what I said on Facebook. If only I'd known it, I'd have parked both of mine in that street and would have been happy days at the Vischer House. Well, Grant, big news down under this week as Virgin Blue unveils a new management style.
Yes, and I've got just the sound effect for it. Here it is.
Truth.
Yes. Don Porchetti.
It's truth. It sounds like something out of a B-grade movie. Has the mafia moved in or something?
Well, that's what you said, wasn't it? You said Don Borghetti had come
no,
in.
No, not Don Borghetti. John Borghetti.
Oh! Oops. Sorry. Wrong sound effect. My mistake. Sorry, guys. Okay. Oh, you said new management, Don Borghetti. I'm thinking, oh, yeah, here we go. It's pasta all around at Virgin, but obviously not. Okay, I guess it's not quite that much of a drastic change in management style.
Yes, I tell you what, it's. I'm not sure whether it's something out of a mafia movie or something out of a KGB defection, but former Qantas executive general manager John Borghetti has emerged as the new boss of Virgin Blue, replacing Brett Godfrey mid-year.
That's right, yeah. Godfrey's been on the way out for a while. He said he's had enough, and I think it's a pretty wise move. Honestly, because Godfrey's done a great job. He's absolutely brilliant at starting the gig off. He has taken Virgin Blue from absolutely nothing to a fully operational airline, both domestic, international, long haul, international, short haul. He's really done an incredible job getting it to where it is. But his style of management is great for getting things started. But now that it's up and running, it does need a different structure. It's not uncommon with companies that the people who start it are not necessarily the right type of people to take it through to the middle growth phase, because their mindset is one of push and grow and compete and get things going, as opposed to steadily expand and so on, which I think Virgin Blue needs now.
Yeah, Virgin Blue. I was looking at a comparison the other day, Grant. Virgin Blue's got currently 85 aircraft in its fleet, and Qantas has something in the order of about 245 aircraft in its fleet. So Virgin as an airline, as a group, has certainly grown quickly under Brett Godfrey. But John Borghetti now, he was with Qantas, and he left Qantas in April last year after 36 years at the company.
He worked his way up from baggage handling.
Yeah, it's the classic worked its way up from the mailroom type of scenario here. And he was in the front running, of course, to replace Jeff Dixon when he rather famously or infamously stepped down from the top job at Qantas last year. But of course, as we all know now, that he didn't get the job, and Alan Joyce, in fact, got that job at Qantas. So John Borghetti left. He's probably been getting a bit of R&R for the last year or so. And obviously, I would say some negotiations have been going on for quite some time, headhunting and the like, trying to get Mr. Borghetti there. He has a very, very good reputation in the airline industry in this country, and I'm sure that he'll fit right in there at Virgin Blue, and he'll go after his former employers with great tenacity.
Yeah, that's right. He was apparently watching the Formula One Grand Prix in Singapore in September and wound up having lunch with Richard Branson and some of the Virgin team. So it was all started from there, and the word going around here is that there were a lot of people saying, if your next person isn't Borchetti, you really need to reassess your selection criteria, because everyone agreed that he was the man to take Virgin into the next layer.
Yeah, Borchetti will take over the reins of Virgin Blue on May the 8th of this year. Virgin Blue chairman Neil Chatfield said in a statement just the other day that he says with the company poised to move to its next level, John is the right person to now lead Virgin Blue through to that new phase of evolution. So that's pretty much what Grant said at the start there. John Borchetti has also said in the same statement that the company is in good shape and is exceptionally well placed to build on its strengths and to embrace revenue growth opportunities ahead. He looks forward to working with the team to create an even more competitive environment for air travellers, domestic and international. So nicely played there, Grant, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, no, very nicely played. And also the fact that Borchetti likes his fast cars, and he's going to the Grand Prix in Melbourne later this month in March, just before he takes on the new job. Apparently, Branson this year has his own Formula One racing team. So, yeah, it's going to be pretty interesting. Borchetti loving his cars and Branson loving his cars. We'll see how it all comes together.
I bet Borchetti would just love the way you pronounce his name properly, Grant.
I'm probably pronouncing it the too wrong a formal way, knowing my luck. He's lived here most of his life. I think he was 7 when he came over here from Italy. So he's probably used to the Aussie way of saying Borchetti.
Yeah, well, he did grow up in the rather working class suburb of Glenroy, according to the newspapers. Now, for those of you who don't know Melbourne, you couldn't get much more blue collar and working class than that part of Melbourne. They do it tough up that part of the city a lot of the time, don't they, mate? It's
yeah.
It's, how can I say that without being shot?
Too late.
Too late.
I'm already ducking and covering, mate.
Then again, of course, if any of you are familiar with Melbourne and know where I live, it's not much different here. So
I was holding off on saying what more blue collar than Cranbourne.
Yeah. So there we go. Now, Grant. Speaking of stately Bentley Manors, now Grant lives in a far more well-to-do suburb than I do. Grant, how many miles down the road are we moving to your new abode, and is it in fact going to be another stately manor?
Well, according to Google Maps, it's 600 metres away from the old place. This is part of the joy of staying in the zone for my boy's school. It's a very small selection area to be able to go to the school. It's one of the better ones in Melbourne. It's still public, not private. And so to get in there, you've got to stay in the zone. So, yes, we've rented a truck and we're loading it and unloading it and zapping it 600 metres back and forth. It's been lots of fun so far. Tomorrow is the final big push to get all the rest of it done, and I have no idea how long it'll be before I have internet again.
Which is why, folks, this is most probably the shortest Australia desk of all time. Until next week, I'm Steve Vischer.
And I'm Grant McCarran.
And we might even come up with two stories next week. Cheers, folks.
Well, all right.
That was short.
I guess it was just a slow news week everywhere, but I'd like to point out that even though this was like the shortest news week, well, the shortest Australia desk ever, I think they still ran a little bit long over what they initially promised back in the day.
By a couple of minutes. But, you know, hey, Rob, do you live in a stately manor?
Yes, actually. In fact, I'm in the West Wing right now.
Yeah, we'd like to thank Steve and Grant for their report. Be sure to follow them on the Plain Crazy Down Under podcast.
Even if they do talk funny.
Right, moving on to listener mail. PJ from Houston sent in a bunch of great comments in an MP3 file. Actually, we really encourage listeners to make recordings like this. If you need some help doing that, just let us know and we'll help you out. Here's the first part of PJ's comments.
Hey guys, PJ from Houston, Texas here. I have a few comments to make. First of all, I really love your show and a lot of great information. It is, you know, primarily concentrated on airlines, which isn't necessarily my area of expertise, but still good to see hear information from the other side there too. Dan, I really love all your business analysis and kind of hearing the business aspect of things as well. I have a few comments I want to make. I just recently caught up on a bunch of your episodes. And first off, I want to talk about the backscatter scanners for the TSA. I have to say, I disagree wholeheartedly with runway girl Mary Kirby and that these things are really worthwhile and a good thing and that they should be mandated. First of all, I really kind of question the effectiveness of the TSA in general and that they're more into giving the illusion of security than they are actually securing us. I mean, as evidenced by the underwear bomber and other things that make it through the security checkpoint. Was there a gun made onto the concourse in Charlotte, I think it was, a few years ago, and things of that nature. You know, granted, the backscatter scanners would stop the gun going through, but, you know, I've read in many sources saying that the backscatter scanners would not have stopped the underwear bomber anyway. So I really don't think that that's there necessary. I think it's another, you know, example of wasteful spending by our government and kind of an unnecessary thing to, well, just one more way for the TSA to try to justify their existence. And I have to say, I love Paul's quote from your guest from a few weeks ago that said that the TSA is making people who never fly feel safer every day. Another issue I have with the backscatter scanners is the privacy issue. I know that, you know, Dan is fine with, you know, having people see him without clothes and, you know, even offers his phone number to the person looking at it. And Mary Kirby is fine without people with people seeing her without clothes. And to be honest, I'm fine with that too for myself. However, I wouldn't want my wife to go through there and have people see her. And God forbid I had a daughter, especially like a teenage daughter, that would have to go through these things and be subject to that as well. I know that they say that images can't be stored and there's no way for them to save those images and transmit those out and be leaked. However, there's got to be some way for them to save images. How would they use those to prosecute someone who tried to make it through with something that they shouldn't have? So I the whole thing kind of sticks in my craw, and I really just don't think it's a good idea, and it's a more of an invasion of privacy that people say it's okay for, you know, the sake of security, but really I don't think there's any proven record that security is enhanced by any of these measures, and that I think it's just all kind of an unnecessary thing.
Well, I think PJ's objection to the backscatters scanning machines, especially with respect to, like, you know, wife and daughters, is probably the objection that I hear more often than any other objection. I think a lot of people feel that way.
Well, I also object to the fact that I think that, you know, seeing Mary Kirby in that state would be really cool.
Careful.
I'm sorry. I mean, terrible. No. No, but, you know, seriously, PJ's point about wasteful government, what are we protecting against? Oh, my God. And it didn't help us with the underwear bomber. I mean, and yeah, come on.
Okay, gentlemen, since two of you have children, would you want your children to go through those backscatters?
You know what? I haven't seen
the images.
The images like, actually, so I don't really know.
Well, there've been some there've been a lot in the press kind of all along, but there've been some more recently that look more maybe digitally obscured than those I've seen in the past. Just a couple of nights ago on the news, there was some issue with these scanners that made the news, and they showed the images, and the entire head of the person was blurred out. And my understanding is that's not the TV station doing it. That's the way they are projected to the, you know, the technician who's looking at them. And as for the rest of the body, you know, yeah, you could tell it was a person, but it definitely was not recognizable as any particular person. So I don't know. They don't seem that bad.
Yeah, but you know what? I think PJ's point about the fact that nobody has raised as many objections as TSA had thought they might. There have been some objections, but not people are not outraged. People seem to, like I said, after 9/11, people seem to be willing to put up with just about anything.
Yeah,
I think they think they should do it. I don't think they want to do it, but I think they believe that they should do it.
They being the TSA, you mean?
No, I'm saying people, that passengers
okay,
feel like they should be putting up with this. It's just the price of admission.
Okay, well, PJ goes on with some more comments.
Second thing, I have my own little Whiskey Tango Foxtrot with all due respect to Courtney. My Whiskey Tango Foxtrot goes out to Dan Webb for saying that GA is boring. You get all excited about the airline stuff, which is great. You have a lot of good analysis and stuff, but we're talking about three or four aircraft types that make up or three or four aircraft manufacturers, I should say, that make up the entire airline fleet. GA has literally thousands of different aircraft types, a lot of variety, a lot of exciting stuff, and the technology in GA airplanes far surpasses some of the technology available in the airline fleet. So there's a lot of exciting stuff in the GA, and I just would like to see some more respect paid to that type of thing.
Dan?
Oh, Dan's gone. I think we lost him. Yeah, he's gone.
No way.
Oh, Dan, I think
he's
here.
Gone. I'm here. Oh, actually, I hit mute on my microphone.
Okay.
Okay, yeah. Calm down. But, okay. So,
what did you say while you were on mute?
Well, no, I was just eyeing for a little while. But no, GA is cool. I don't know. I'm interested in GA. I think it's really exciting. I just find analyzing airline strategy when you have billions of dollars moving, I just find that more interesting to write out. But
that's
yeah,
just your
no,
thing.
No. That's it's just my thing. Yeah, but actually, I'm interested to hear from PJ or anyone else when he was saying some of the more advanced technology in the GA world. I'd be interested in hearing more about that.
When my interest in aviation started, it was primarily commercial aviation. But as I got into it, you know, I kind of tried to extend my horizons. And you know, in the beginning, I knew nothing about general aviation, and it was sort of my desire to, you know, learn as much as I could about, you know, all forms of aviation that led me to start doing things like listening to the Uncontrolled Airspace podcast and things like that. And, you know, I've got to say, you know, I'm by no means am I an expert in GA, but boy, you know, I learned a lot of things and, you know, it's all aviation. So I don't know. For me, it's all good.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And I will say eventually, I'm not saying it's going to happen now because I don't have the money for it, but eventually, I mean, I'll go and get a PPL, hopefully.
What's a PPL?
Private pilot's license.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Well, how did you forget that?
Well, I mean, we don't.
He just wanted to make sure that you actually knew what you were saying, because you might have just had sent out a message to Twitter asking for people to quickly give you GA comments so you could throw it around so you don't like know what you're talking about.
Yeah, and besides, we don't use the term PPL here in the States.
I believe ticket would be the better term.
Yeah,
I know. I'll be honest. My friends over down at Riddle, when they got their licenses, they always referred to it as a PPL.
I rest my case.
No, whoa! What's that supposed to mean?
Well,
it's a okay. Ticket.
Yeah,
Dan, it's a ticket.
Yeah,
it's
a, okay. Okay, it a I'm I'll call it. I'm just saying, my friends who got the physical license called it did not. I've never heard the phrase. Okay. They've never used the phrase ticket. Okay, I'm just saying.
Do they? No. Are they working?
they're at school right now.
Oh, okay. All
right. Rob's trying to make a point. I get it.
I just don't get it at all. No.
Yeah. We'll explain
it's
later.
Okay.
All right,
okay.
Let's finish up with PJ's message.
Another comment I had was about the airplane spotting. I listened to John's voicemail last week about the being run off from Chicago's Midway Airport. And I want to say that here in Houston, we have a really, really active spotting community. I'm friends with several spotters, and I'm a pseudo-spotter myself. Group here, you can find them at HoustonSpotters.net. And we have a really great relationship with the Houston Airport System and the different airports around the area. If you visit our website, there's a bunch of different spotting guides available. So if you are interested in doing some spotting at the Houston airports, check those out. We have a great relationship, like I said, with the airport management at Intercontinental. We even have a system in place where if we're going to be spotting somewhere on the airport property or outside the airport fence around the property, we'll call the dispatch office and tell them where we are and give them a description of ourselves and the vehicle and, you know, how long we're going to be there. And they pass the word out to all the security forces, and they know that we're kind of, you know, there not to cause trouble, but to be there to kind of look at the airplanes, enjoy our hobby. And also, you know, we call in stuff, too, that you know, we call in FOD that we see on the taxiways. We call in, you know, things, suspicious activities around the area, too, to kind of enhance the security of the area. You know, the Houston Hobby Airport, we have a lot of great access there, too. And a great point of access for the spotters is at the 1940 Air Terminal Museum, of which I'm a volunteer as well. The museum has a special event the third Saturday of every month. It's called Wings and Wheels. We have a different theme each month. And one of the key, the best things from a spotting perspective for this event is that we actually open up our airport ramp to the public. And people can come out inside the airport fence and check out the airplanes we have on display there that fly in for the day. But a lot of times, too, we have 737s taxiing by literally 30 feet away from you. And that's really kind of a cool opportunity to get some unique photographs and some unique opportunities there, too. Another thing, if I may make another shameless plug for the 1940 Air Terminal Museum, is that we are in the process of raffling off a 1958 Cessna 175, which could be yours for a $50 raffle ticket. So go to www.1940airterminal.org to find out about that. and our various upcoming Wings and Wheels events. Most notably, we have March 20th will be a Cessna fly-in and a Let's Go Flying Day. So if you're interested in learning how to fly, a bunch of flight schools will be there to kind of advertise their services. Also, we're going to have a bunch of Cessnas fly in that day, too. And that event is sponsored by Devon Aviation, which is our local Cessna sales and authorized representative for the Southeast Texas, Louisiana, and Gulf Coast region. April 17th will be Women in Aviation Day. We're going to have a bunch of women's aviation groups present to talk about their organizations. And then May 15th, will be a Beechcraft fly-in. So more information on this, check out our website, 1940airterminal.org. Check out our Facebook page. If you just search for 1940 Air Terminal Museum on Facebook, you can find us there too. And also back to the spotters thing, the spotting site is HoustonSpotters.net. Keep up the great work, guys. I really enjoy the show, and I will keep listening. Catch you later. Bye-bye.
Of course he enjoyed the show. He was half of the damn show.
PJ got a lot of plugs in, didn't he?
Jeez.
Good for him, huh?
Don't anybody else try that. We're not going to let those kind of people on our show again. Yeah.
Well.
I think that's pretty cool, though, actually. The spotters are – those guys are really organized.
I mean,
they are – they're kind of like a – well, I don't want to say cult. That makes them sound a little creepy, but – they are very cool.
Well, there are a lot of them.
I didn't call them a cult. I didn't say that.
Our a spotter episode, as it were, with Phil Derner. That's actually been our most popular episode so far.
I don't think I was on that one, was I?
Oh, maybe that's why.
Yeah.
I don't think I was on that one either, so.
Yeah, okay. Dan, I think the
David, you were right.
I'm keeping my mouth shut.
Speaking of David, just one more piece of listener mail. This came in from CO Flyer. That's probably Colorado Flyer.
Or Continental Flyer, depending.
Oh, it could be, couldn't it? So I don't know. So he says, well, or she says, interesting episode as usual, but I think that for once, David may have been wrong about something. When you were talking about the JSF, it was noted that its cost overruns had triggered a Nunn-McCurdy review, 15% over budget. David stated that now LM would have to cover the costs out of its own pocket. That's only true if it's a fixed price contract, which I don't think the JSF is at this point. If it was fixed price, it wouldn't cost the U.S. government any more money, and Congress probably wouldn't give a hoot.
Okay, interesting point.
You're waiting for it? You're ready? Ready? But all sitting down?
We're ready? We're ready?
I was wrong. I went and looked. What the Nunn-McCurdy Amendment says, or the Nunn-McCurdy provision says, that any Department of Defense contract with a growth more than 15%, Congress has to be notified. If it goes over 25% cost overrun, it has to be canceled.
Right.
Unless the Secretary of Defense comes up with some legitimate reason. And actually, there has been two programs, satellite programs, actually, that have been actually canceled because of it. And at the time, the JSF hasn't quite gotten to the 15% yet, but it probably will get there. But that means it just has to be explained to the Congress, and it's going to be, they're going to spend more money explaining why it's going over, costing so much. And it's going to be, the JSF is the next tanker. So Daniel, we'll be talking about military hardware programs for a long time. I know that that's only second low. That's the only thing that you hate more than general aviation is military aviation.
No, au contraire, my friend. Au contraire.
Au contraire.
So really? I admit I'm wrong. Stay tuned. We'll keep seeing what happens with the JSF.
All right. Thanks, David. All right. I think that's it. We'd like to thank our guest, Mary Grady. Find her at avweb.com. As always, we'd like to thank Steve Vischer and Grant McCarron for the Australia Desk Report.
Yeah, but we can't. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought that's where you were going.
Yeah, no. You're going to be in hot water with those guys.
I know,
just wait till next week's report.
Yeah.
You're right. Toast.
Yeah, my didgeridoo is
done. Is done.
Yeah.
All right. We'd especially like to thank you all, our listeners. And Buy a t-shirt. Let's see. Before we do that, first, David, where can people find Rob online?
Wow. Ooh, okay. Clever. I like
mix
this.
It up.
Yeah. Rob could be, if you're on Twitter, Rob could be found at JetWine, or you can find him at jetwine.com.
Great. And Rob, where can people find Dan online?
Dan? Oh, Dan. Do you mean our Dan?
Our Dan.
Our Dan. They can find Dan at Things in the Sky. And then there's a slash there somewhere.
.com, right?
No, just .com, .com.
Oh, is it thingsinthesky.com? Okay. I thought there was a slash for your blog, but thingsinthesky.com and Dan Webbage on Twitter.
Good. And Dan?
Am I right? Oh, good.
Yes, no, that's it.
Yeah.
Dan, good. Tell our listeners where they can find me.
Oh, I thought I was expecting David. Okay.
Ooh, this no. Max is getting tricky.
No, you can. You can find Max on Twitter at MaxFlight, or you can find him at 30,000feet.com.
Very cool. And you can find David at whatjustflewby.com for his fantastic blog.
Well, I thought it was whatjustflewby.blogspot.com.
Not anymore, kiddo. You missed a couple of episodes.
Oh, you got the domain. Ooh,
he's
wow.
He's got the domain. Big time. Ooh. And you can also find David on Twitter, where he's enormously popular, I think, more so than the rest of us, maybe with the possible exception of Dan, maybe.
I still have less followers than the three of you. So I was happy to reach 200 the other day. That is a far cry from Mr. Popularity, Mr. Webb, and everybody has to listen to Mr. Jetwine and, of course, Max Flight. So
Rob has me beat. Rob has me beat by a fair margin.
You guys are so competitive. But I didn't get to give David's Twitter on. David on Twitter is at DM Vanderhoof, VanderHoof. Visit us at airplanegeeks.com for show notes. You can read comments left by other listeners, or you can even leave your own. Follow us on Twitter at airplanegeeks, and you can send email to us, thegeeks@airplanegeeks.com. Best yet, you can leave a message on our listener line.
What's that listener line?
And if you want to call the Airplane Geeks, you can dial 361-GEEKS-01.
We're happy to get your topic suggestions or guest recommendations or even just say hello. Be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or in the Zune Marketplace. If you're in iTunes especially, leave us a comment, leave us a review. Those help us a great deal. As always, opening and closing music is provided by Brother Love. Find him at brotherloverocks.com.
Backup vocals provided by Dan Webb. You can find him at thingsinthesky.com.
Actually, David did a great job with the happy birthday singing.
Oh, stuff. Yeah, absolutely.
I was pretty darn impressed.
For you, Rob, anything.
But we are going to have a disclaimer, right? That guys like PJ are not going to be allowed to take up 9 minutes of the show. We're not, you know, we have a time limit on our voicemail, don't we? Or something. Oh, actually, he did his own MP3.
His own MP3. If you'd like to send us one, if you can keep it under 5 minutes, that's great. That's kind of what we shoot for.
So we didn't make any provisions for clever listeners, did we?
No. Especially ones with lots of plugs.
So we'll just have to be like the TSA and interact a new rule to counteract
That's
the last
threat. Right. We'll figure out some way to cope with these clever listeners.
Join us again next week as we talk aviation on the Airplane Geeks podcast.
Good night, everybody.
See you later.
Night all.
Australia guys, do we have to have them on every week? I mean, they're nice guys, but are we recording this? You don't have the record button on, do you?
It's rolling.
I mean, I love those guys. I mean, those guys are great. They are great. I mean, they are just great.
Well, Rob, in all fairness, I think you've stepped back from your usual aggressive self. You used to ask for bodily parts and money. Now you just wish them to go away. So I guess that's progress. Whatever the 12-step program you're in, it seems to be moving forward.
Right? Yeah, I think it's just moved on to acceptance. So, Yeah, we've moved on from anger to, well, because anger is one of the first steps.
Oh, I'm just kidding those guys. I love them.